No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to us and affect the lives of everybody. Tonight, we have a man who's been on our show before several times, and we'd like to welcome him back. He's known for being a great predictor, called everything from the Oracle to the Nostradamus of politics. But he's also, I want to point out, a great political scientist who's written many books on the subject. And as somebody who studied political science, I'm very familiar with some of his work, and maybe he can help us get some insight into what I think is just astounding. Dr. Lichtman, thank you so much for being on the show.
My great pleasure, and I'm a great admirer of yours.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind. And you know what? Can we start out with the keys? What do you think went wrong there? Because you've been so good at predicting. And by the way, 9 out of 11 or 12, that's still an A in my book. So you're still a great predictor. But what do you think? Was there anything? Has the paradigm changed because the environment's changed? Do they need to be modified?
Yes.
There's keys. Yeah.
Yes. Two things.
Okay, go ahead.
To remember, the keys are premised on the idea that a pragmatic, rational electorate decides whether the party holding the White House has governed well enough to get another 4 years. This is held retrospectively since the horse and buggy days of politics in 1860. Mm. When I developed the keys in 1981, I looked at 1860 through 1980, and the keys have held predictively since I predicted Ronald Reagan's re-election in April 1982, nearly 3 years ahead of time, when 60% of Americans said he was too old to run again. The keys are totally nonpartisan. They have nothing to do with my politics. I predicted Reagan and Trump in 2016, the two most conservative presidents of our time. But there has been a huge sea change, which call into question whether we still have pragmatic, rational decision-making. Two things. One, disinformation. Disinformation has always been with us, but it has exploded to an unprecedented degree in 2024. There's Trump and his allies. There is the right-wing media sounding board whose propaganda far drowns out the very meek and tepid mainstream media that's now being taken over by billionaires like Jeff Bezos. There are the right-wing podcasts like Joe Rogan that have many millions of followers. Then there's the billionaires like Elon Musk who put their thumb on this election. I read one report that Elon Musk's disinformation has had 2 billion views given his control over X. And it's not just disinformation about inflation, which people think is still raging, even though it's down to just over 2%, but it's about every aspect of the economy, unemployment, jobs, growth, the stock market. And it's not limited to the economy. You know, there is this disinformation about undocumented immigrants being bloodthirsty killers out to get you. In fact, undocumented immigrants are the most law-abiding part of our society, committing crimes, including violent crimes, at vastly lower rates than Native-born Americans, for good reason. They don't want to get caught up in the criminal justice system.
Of course.
You know, this misinformation about FEMA, claiming, you know, funds were diverted to migrants. Disinformation about Ukraine, claiming that a third-rate power like Ukraine really started a war with one of the world's great powers, Russia. The other thing that's exploded in this election is the dark side of American history. Trends that have always been with us, but again, reached an acme in this election, and I'm talking about racism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and misogyny. And remember, misogyny, anti-Semitism, xenophobia crosses ethnic and racial lines. The first anti-immigrant bill was the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798, and the enemy then was the French, ethnically, racially indistinguishable from the senators. And this really calls into question, you know, whether we have not just the keys operating, but a functional, rational democracy. You know, The Economist keeps track of this, and throughout the 20th century, after the second golden age of democracy in the late 20th century, in the 21st century, democracy has been on the decline all over the world. The vast majority of the world's peoples no longer live in a functional democracy. Democracy is precious, but like all precious things, it can be destroyed.
Well, you know, this is the thing that I find most disturbing, because we do see this. We see, you know, we have Modi in India, we have the guy in Brazil, we have the guy in Argentina, we have the guy in North Korea, we have Xi Jinping, we have, you know, it seems that this is spreading all over the world.
And Trump's model, Orban in Hungary, yeah.
Right, yeah. And let me ask you, do you think, especially with the rise of anti-Semitism and some of the other things that are going on, this has to invoke an image of 1930s and 40s Germany, right? And have we in America replaced the German Jew with immigrants in general? Have they become our latest scapegoat? And do we what do you think about that? Are we headed in that direction, or are there still enough of us with almost 50% to keep that from happening? Because wasn't Germany a great democracy when all that went down?
The Weimar Republic. It was considered a cultural icon. You know, one of the great cultural societies of the world, a rising democracy. And let me make a couple of points. One of the critical things that led to the rise of dictators in Germany or Italy, not taking seriously a would-be authoritarian. And I think we've seen that phenomenon here. People don't take seriously what Trump says, and you've got to. Because, you know, remember in Germany, the elite said, oh, Hitler doesn't mean right. all that, he's just saying it, he'll protect us from the commies and the socialists, right. and in fact, he meant it all. Secondly, you're right, there's always an other. It could be the Jews in Germany, the Uyghurs in China. And here it could be the immigrants who are smeared the same way the Jews in Germany were being smeared. And some of the same language that we used against the Jews in Germany are being used against the immigrants here, almost word for word. You know, right. Donald Trump says immigrants are poisoning the blood of the country.
Yes.
Just what Hitler said about the Jews. When you dehumanize people like that, that's when the danger creeps in. Now, I want to stay optimistic. You know, Trump got 74 million votes or so. You know, there are nearly 300 million adults in this country. So there is still a huge right. reservoir of those who, you know, don't believe necessarily in what he's selling. But I always come back to this maxim. It's not just the evil people who wreak havoc on the world. It's the good people who don't do enough to stop them. And right. the good people in America really need to rally.
Right. I always think of On the archives, it says past is prologue, and that all it takes for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. Right? That's something that keeps on popping into my head all the time. And you know, it's easy to armchair quarterback, and I'm doing it just like everybody else. But I remember exactly what you just said. I remember watching the first debate and saying to my wife, she shouldn't be laughing at him. When he's saying these things, she shouldn't be laughing, you know, because it makes her look like she's not serious. You know, she wants to be the president. Of course, it's easy to armchair quarterback at this point. And I have to say that I suffer from my own prejudice, which was I couldn't believe that people would actually elect this guy, especially after we saw him out. But what about, you know, the fact that these lies that he tells constantly are ridiculous. They don't even, you know, you don't even have to think them through. Is there anybody that really believes that immigrants are eating our dogs and cats? I mean,
probably not. But here's the thing: they think this is symbolic of how immigrants are preying on us. You know. They might not be eating our dogs and cats, but they're taking jobs away from us. They're killing Americans. All of this is completely wrong. You know, it would be much like the dictatorships in the mid-20th century to try to round up and put in camps and deport all undocumented immigrants. You know as well as I, undocumented immigrants don't live in isolated communities with a big sign, undocumented immigrants.
Right.
They are totally mingled in with the general population. 4.4 million U.S. citizen children have as undocumented immigrants their parents. Undocumented immigrants are married to U.S. citizens. You would virtually have to have a national police force disrupting the lives of tens of millions of Americans. And by the way, we know from these ICE raids that the data that separates undocumented immigrants from legal immigrants and U.S. citizens is terribly flawed. All of these raids bring in lots and lots of U.S. citizens. If you're going to be raiding tens of thousands of homes, you're going to be bringing in God knows how many U.S. citizens. Plus, what are you going to do to the agricultural industry, the construction industry, the personal service industry? It'll push us into a recession, all in the pursuit of lies.
Well, and you know what? I think it's been my opinion for a very long time that people really aren't searching for the truth as much as they are searching for validation of their own prejudices. So when you hear that they're sneaking into our country, all these immigrants are taking our jobs, and you go to McDonald's and you can't clearly understand a woman on the other end of the speaker because she talks with an accent, I think a lot of people are saying to themselves, oh yeah, there we go. They rely on anecdotal information that they seek out instead of the facts, and that's really dangerous. I mean, Kamala Harris may have worked in a McDonald's, but none of my kids wanted to work in McDonald's, you know, and none of them want to cut lawns, and none of them wanted to be in the agricultural industry and all these other jobs that these people have filled since the beginning of time. My family goes back to the American Revolution on my father's side, but on my mother's side, my grandmother was a maid when she came from Italy. That's what she did. That's what her sisters did.
Yeah.
This is the history of America.
My grandfather worked in the garment industry as a presser, you know, same thing.
Right. And maybe that's part of my experience that has really touched me, is that when I had my first job, I worked in a Jewish family-owned clothing store, and our tailor had the tattoos on his arm. He had been, as a child, in a concentration camp and watched his sisters, everybody died but him and his father, because the Nazis liked their uniforms tailored, you know, and they were tailors.
Yeah.
And you know, I never forget that man.
Absolutely. You know what I found especially chilling? and I assume this is true because it's consistent with everything he says, that he wants generals like Hitler's generals. Well,
yes.
Those of us who know something about the Holocaust know not all the Jews died in Auschwitz and the death camps. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were killed by Hitler's generals who ran mobile killing squads that machine-gunned Jews.
Yeah.
One of them testified, General Ohlendorf, at the Nuremberg trials. And he was asked, why were you killing not just men but women and children? He said, those were our orders. We wanted especially to kill women and children because we wanted to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth. Those are Hitler's generals. Those are the generals that Trump wants to model himself on. It's just frightening, too, for people, for everyone, but especially people like me, you know, who lost family in the Holocaust.
Right. Right. And, you know, I remember that right after the Second World War, a lot of academic institutions in America did studies on authoritarianism. And I know that the Milgram experiments, for example, in California, where they were telling people to torture people, and people did it. They followed the order, right?
No,
only one person said, it's unbelievable to me, but only one person said, look, I'm in the psychology building at UCLA. I'm not, you know, I don't have to do this, and walked out.
Exactly.
Everybody else agreed to do it. Now, I hope that Germans being much more regimented and organized and, you know, authoritarian than most Americans. I hope that's not true here. But let me ask you, was any chance that Karl Marx is right? Any chance that we're both political scientists? We both studied the works of Marx and Engels and other communist theorists. Can we not promote the general welfare by all of us promoting our own self-interest? Is it impossible for us you think democracy has reached a point when we can no longer promote the general welfare because everybody's so myopic and they're following their own self-interest?
That's, you know, extremely frightening. And we are at the precipice. I can't say, you know, we're going to fall off it, but that's certainly a real possibility. As, you know, I indicated, throughout the great swath of human history, democracy is one minuscule dot. You know, for most of human history,
It's
been authoritarians, whether kings or popes or conquerors or dictators. And Trump kind of epitomizes what you're saying, the ultimate in self-interest. He cares about nothing but promoting his own interest. I don't understand how anyone could think that Trump cares about anyone but himself. And that kind of epitomizes the idea that if everyone only cares about himself and there's no caring about the common good, no empathy for others, and no concern for truth, that does put democracy in great peril. Remember, democracy is precious. And like all precious things, it can be destroyed, and once it's shattered, very difficult to put the pieces back together again.
Yeah, I'm sure that's absolutely true. And let me ask you to put your political scientist hat on now and do a little analysis. Do you think there were serious mistakes that were made at the end that added to this whole thing, like President Biden's off-the-cuff remarks calling? It seems to me, it was very hard for me to listen to people say that Biden's remark about Trump supporters was, you know, damning to Kamala Harris, considering what Trump had said. I mean, Trump said such horrible, horrible, horrible things. And I don't know why we seem to ignore that and then pounce on something that the president said. And you know what? I'm a politician. It was the wrong thing to say. But I got to tell you, from my heart, I'm not so much in disagreement with it. I think a lot of people that voted for this man need to be ashamed of themselves. I think every veteran who a few days before Veterans Day, voted for a man that calls dead veterans suckers and losers should be ashamed. And I think every woman who voted for a man who supported not allowing them to control their own bodies should be ashamed. I really do. But I know they're not, and I know that I've seen some of the comments that have been made about you, and they're horrible and they're untrue. And you know, I just got a plea on your behalf. You know, this man, Alan Lichtman, is an academic who does his best to help analyze the political system, expresses his First Amendment right to say what he believes. And if there's people out there that want to try to intimidate him and attack him, let's make sure the rest of us stand up and protect him, okay? Because that's what America was about.
Thank you so much.
Shouldn't we be scathing
the attack? My home has been attempted to be breached. Our police is here. The FBI is on alert. And as you say, all I do is express my free speech rights.
Yes. And you know what? We should be proud of the fact that President Biden has stood up and said, well, there's going to be a peaceful transfer of power. Why don't people look at that and say, oh, my God, these guys are so much different than the other guys, right? This guy hasn't even admitted he lost. But thank God this was a fair election, right? So now we have the definition of a fair election. A fair election is one you win. A corrupt election is one you don't, right? It's crazy.
They made that clear.
It's crazy. And they have made that
clear. It
goes
to the point you made about this extreme narcissism. We're totally transactional. We don't care about the truth.
Right.
We don't care about what the verdict of the people is. All we care about is grabbing and holding power. Why do you think the billionaires are lining up behind
them? Right.
Because they have the good of ordinary people in mind. If you believe that, I have a big bridge in my hometown of Brooklyn to sell you.
There you go. And you know that, it's just incredible. Last week, we had an editor from the Washington Post, or the week before that, rather, to talk about why the Post didn't endorse. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that the two major newspapers that refused to endorse were the LA Times and the Washington Post, both owned by billionaires. I don't think that's a coincidence. And
no.
I don't know why anybody would think, you know, that, and you know, maybe there's a legitimate reason not to endorse. But ever since I've been in politics, the first guy I worked for was Jimmy Carter. And ever since then, the Post has been endorsing. And it's just crazy. And it bothers me that we had a New York Times reporter that said he was worried that the fourth estate was going to sell out to people like advertisers because they needed it. Basically, what he said is, are you going to write an article about an expose on gun violence if the NRA is taking out full-page ads in your newspaper? But this is the same thing, right? They're afraid. The Washington Post is afraid of retribution already, and he's got the Supreme Court. Oh my God! And Dr. Lichtman, it looks like he's going to win the House. They're going to win the House.
Yeah,
the public,
no restraint.
It'll just be horrible. And of course, in the District of Columbia, we're going to become the whipping boy for these guys because we're all Democrats, as you well know. I live in AU Park. My wife is a graduate of American University, so we know. You know, we're a city of liberal Democrats more than in, you know, and we'll make the perfect foil for these people's ridiculous concept that America is just for them. I mean, I don't know.
It's frightening.
It is frightening.
If this Supreme Court decision on immunity had been in effect in the 1970s, Richard Nixon would have gotten away with Watergate and much more. And our democracy would have died 50 years ago.
Yep. And the Alien Sedition Act that you mentioned from the 1800s are trying to revive it. I mean,
yes. How? He wants to revive that act.
Yes. I mean,
and they want to revive the Comstock Act, you know, from the 19th century to prohibit abortion and contraception.
Yeah. It's just horrible. And, you know, I guess that was another thing that lulled me into a false sense of security about everything, is that my daughters and my wife and most of the women I knew were outraged. You know, my wife, who's already had three children, doesn't want any more children, thank God. And, you know, she's outraged by it. You know, I guess I figured they were going to rise up, and that's the thing that really gets me. How can Muslims, Palestinians, vote for this man? Do they not remember what he said about them? That he didn't, he want them blocked from the country, that when he was president, that he wanted them tagged somehow so we knew where they were? Do they not? You know, the one commercial that got me, doctor, that I thought was really effective, because I thought of my Italian grandmother. I lived in North New Jersey in the Italian neighborhood. We had vigilantes when I was a kid. My grandmother would tell you that they were horrible people, but she would also tell you that they kept her safe, right? She believed in every prejudice under the sun. And those nasty Italian guys, she didn't like them, but they kept her safe. And, you know, Trump ran a commercial with old women who said they were Democrats, but at least he'll keep us safe. And I thought, oh, my God, that's going to resonate. And these are all tactics, right? You talk about you mentioned the French. One of the guys I love, even though he was kind of a despot, was Huey Long. And that was his campaign slogan. 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans, your house could burn down, your baby could drown, not one of those Frenchmen would care. And so the tactics they used here, fear and loathing, you know, it's not your fault, it's your neighbor's fault, are really old political tactics. But let me ask you, with the rise of social media, how about the interjection of AI? So you not only...
It's really scary.
Yeah, you not only get news, but you get news that already feeds into what you believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Social media divides us into impenetrable bubbles. The algorithms are not interested in creating truth, giving you alternative information so you can decide things for yourself. To the contrary, they're interested in one thing, making money, which means they reinforce everything you already believe and already think, and then insulate you from any outside information. So if you're on the conservative side, any alternative information, oh, it's the deep state, it's the swamp, it's the commies, it's the socialists. So it never even gets through the bubble. And this is some, you know, as I said, we've always had disinformation, but this really is something quite new.
Yeah, and it's really, really scary, as you say. Let me ask you, I listen to part of your podcast. I know you do it with your son, who's a young guy. Like, I have a son that's probably not too far apart in his age. I saw a lot of the comments, which were horrible, but I also saw one that resonated with me, which was about inflation and the key that you have that deals with the economic growth key. Did inflation, I thought that was a good comment, did inflation somehow, mutate that so that even though we've had economic growth, it's been somehow outpaced by inflation?
Well, the key has held for 160 years, so.
Yeah.
But no key can withstand the kind of misinformation. People think inflation is still raging when it's just over 2%. You can't bring prices down without plunging the nation into a recession. That's called deflation, and that's a terrible thing. You know, people will lose their jobs. The economy will stagnate. You can only bring inflation under control. My key also tries to account for inflation because it's real. Per capita economic growth, which is growth adjustments for inflation. But again, I think, you know, there's so much rampant disinformation about the economy, not just about inflation, but about every aspect of the economy. Here is something interesting, too. Look at Obama in 2008. What did he inherit? A deep recession from the previous Republican administration, and it took some time to get the economy going. So what does Trump inherit in 2016? The upswing of the recovery, the booming economy. Then you get Biden. And what does he inherit when he wins in 2020? The Trump recession in the last quarter or two of his administration. And now with Trump winning, what is he going to inherit? The booming Biden economy. And I guarantee to you, he will take credit for all the things in the economy that they are now bashing as horrible, tragic, destroying the country. It's pretty ironic, you know, what's going on here.
Well, and and they certainly will. I can tell you politicians always do that. And when they kept on saying, are you better off, when they stole that line from Ronald Reagan, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, I kept on thinking, weren't we still recovering from a pandemic 4 years ago? Of course we're better than we – but of course we're better off than we were 4 years ago. But I think the economy to most people is the price of bread and the price of gas, and I can't believe that we sold our souls as Americans for the price of bread and the price of gas. And look, I just filled my car up yesterday. It was $3.18 a gallon. So it's come down dramatically.
It's almost down 50% or more. And yet, you know, you listen to the right wing media, gas prices are going through the roof, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's funny, my daughter said to me, I talked to her over on the phone. Of course, they're upset about this. I have a 31-year-old daughter and a 26-year-old daughter, 29-year-old son. They're all upset. And my daughter said, shouldn't there be a rule that you can't just go out and bald-faced lie, Dad? Can't you just – I mean, shouldn't there be some rule that you can't stand out there and say that you know, immigrants are murdering and raping people when they're not? And I guess we can't find our way around that. And that's ultimately the thing that's most scary for me. What does this say about us, Doctor? What does this say about what we've become as a nation?
We're at the precipice. And, you know, unfortunately, what we're becoming as a nation, and hopefully it won't go there, is what's going on all over the world. You know, there was a brief flaring of democracy in the 20th century, and it's being snuffed out everywhere. You know, I remember what Lord Grey said at the onset of World War I. The lights are going out all over Europe, and I don't know if they'll be turned on again in our generation. Let's hope the lights aren't going to be turned out here. All right.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Lechman, I know you have to go. You're very busy. Everybody wants to talk to you. And I thank you so much for giving us your insight. Let's hope you're absolutely right that the lights don't go out. We've seen it. I lectured in India a few years ago. You can't even talk. The people were astounded because Trump, it was the end of the Trump presidency, and they were astounded that I would talk about Trump in public because they can't even talk about Modi in public.
Can we plug my show before we go?
Yes, please plug your show. I listen to it.
My live show with my son. We started with nothing. We now have 162,000 subscribers and more than 12 million views on YouTube. It's every Tuesday and Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, and you can easily find it at Alan Lichtman YouTube. That's A-L-L-A-N-L-I-C-H-T-M-A-N YouTube. Thank you for a great discussion, Senator. I really appreciate it.
No. And let me tell you, I'm embarrassed to say that I listened to the whole thing for the first time when you agreed to come back on the show. But I'm going to be a regular listener. I'm putting it on my schedule, and I encourage everybody to do it because this man has great insights, and we need your inspiration right now, Doctor. Thank you so much, and thanks for being on the show.
My great pleasure. Take care. Good night.
Okay. Good night. So let's end. I have to. We still got some time left, and I want to give my 2 cents about what's happening and how important I think it is for us to do what Dr. Lichtman just suggested and make sure that the lights stay on. It's incumbent on every one of us that cares to continue to stand up and continue to fight and continue to stand for what's right. Look, I cannot wrap my head around a man who calls himself a Christian. I'm a Christian. And all he does is deride other people. He sells Bibles made in China, which he holds upside down. And my absolute favorite quote was when he was interviewed by Christian broadcasters, and they asked him whether he was an Old Testament person or a New Testament person. And you know what his response was that he was an e-book guy. He doesn't understand there's even 2 books to the Bible. Man, I knew that before I made my first confirmation, and I think I was 7 years old when I was confirmed. So this man is nothing more than a charlatan. That's all he is. And we've been conned. And it bothers me that we're all out there now, especially some of my heroes. Nancy Pelosi is a hero of mine. I knew her personally. I worked with her at the Democratic National Committee, and she's always been so kind and generous to me, and she's always stood up for the right thing. But even they're sitting out there saying, well, Biden should have gotten out of the race sooner, or we should have done this, or we shouldn't have done that. I say that we should not be focused on what we didn't do to out-con the con man. I think we should be focused on who we are. What have we become? Why did we let this man do what he's doing? We already threw him out once. Why did we let him back in? Same thing. I just came. It's ironic that I came from Brazil, where I spoke at an international conference for an amazing organization called Horaces. And they have the same problem in Brazil. They've reelected a guy that just got out of prison. They threw him in prison for his crimes. And now he's out and they've reelected him. So this strong men mentality, as Dr. Lichtman rightfully pointed out, is spreading all around the world. And let's not make the same mistakes that we made at the turn of the century and in the 30s and 40s with the rise of Nazi Germany, for example. I know that nobody likes to compare what's going on in America today to that horrible, horrible time in history. But let's not forget that many of these right-wing people that are out there who denied the results of the last election are also Holocaust deniers. So let's not forget that there are many people that really don't even care, and it doesn't take many of them to, as we saw with the insurrection. I mean, imagine, I take great pride in being a Biden supporter. I supported Joe Biden when he ran for Senate. I worked for him when I was a consultant. I worked on his first presidential campaign for, back in 20 years ago when he didn't even get the nomination. He withdrew after a while, but I've always been his supporter because he's an honest, straightforward man. And let's not forget that this man who immediately stood up, first, our candidate, Kamala Harris, stood up and said that, congratulated Trump and succeeded that seceded the election. And then President Biden stood up and said there would be an orderly transfer of power. Now, let's compare that to the guy that lost last time who said, go destroy the Capitol. This is the man that we've reelected. We should be outraged, but we have to be resolute in our effort to stem the tide of what's coming. In D.C., we're very scared. I have to tell you, as a senator who's retiring after 18 years in January, the District of Columbia is about to be under attack. Trump has vowed to take over the city. He's tried to do it already. He's got people in Congress who put forth legislation last time to take away home rule in the city. Imagine, we're not going to even have a mayor or a council anymore. These are people that I don't often agree with, but I believe that we have the right to elect them and have them represent us. And imagine that they're going to remove, very possibly remove, representative government from the nation's capital, the center of our democracy. It's just horrible. And, you know, all these people that sit out there and say, oh, you know, this is the way he talks. He didn't mean that he's going to take retribution. What he meant is he was going to lock up the bad people. Well, he didn't say, I'm going to lock up the bad people. He said, I am your retribution. And you know what? I will be your retribution. That is not a campaign slogan. That's a threat. Let me tell you, I'm a guy that's come up with lots of campaign slogans. And that's not a campaign slogan. That's a threat. And I think he means to carry it out. And now, thanks to the Supreme Court, which he dominates, thanks to the people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor Greene said the other day that we want to, I heard her, I don't know that it was the other day, but I heard these remarks the other day when she was talking about drill, baby, drill, right? We want to do that, right? Because none of us realize that North Carolina is being washed away. Florida's fallen into the ocean and California's on fire. We need more coal and more oil, you know, and a man, we have a candidate who's vowed to destroy the solar power industry. They're killing birds, and you're right, go count the birds at the bottom of windmills and the solar panels. And you know, I mean, really, this is where America's going to go? We cannot allow this to happen. Every good American needs to stand up, and I make this plea to you prior to Veterans Day. I hope that each and every one of us remembers the many sacrifices that have been made to create this democracy, the many sacrifices that our forefathers made, many of us. I come from a military family. I'm sure there are millions and millions of people in America that come from military families, and they know the cost of freedom. They know the price that's been paid for our democracy, and we cannot allow it to diminish simply because we feel it's convenient. You know what? I understand the pain of the people in this country who can't find a job. I've got children that are underemployed. I grew up in a different America, you know. But I'll tell you what, I was orphaned at the age of 15. I've worked full-time at something, whether I've been paid for it or not, since I was 14 years old. I understand what it is like to dig dishes and wait on tables and do all sorts of other things. I was a Fuller brush salesman. Most of you people probably don't even understand what that is, but a door-to-door salesman when I was 15 years old. I drove a truck. I dug ditches. I did the you pump gas. I did all sorts of menial labor to work my way up. I wasn't somebody who got $100 million from my father that I then wasted. I didn't make my fortune, and I made a fortune in America, but I didn't make it by on the backs of small businessmen from Atlantic City. This man, who's supposed to be such a great businessman, has failed at every single business that he's ever had, whether it's True Social, whether it was his college, whether it was selling steak knives, whether it was selling Chinese Bibles. The only thing he's ever done is put his name on stuff. And I hope that you will tune in next week, because my guest is an expert on celebrity. And I think that, unfortunately, what we've done is we've elected a celebrity, a reality TV star. We no longer care about what's good and right. We only care about what's popular. And that's wrong. So we all need to be diligent, all of us that care about this country, all of us that care about a woman having control of her own body, all of us care about fair and equitable treatment for everyone, everyone that believes that Black Lives Matter. How can young black men vote for this man? Do they not understand that he does not like black people? How can Palestinians vote for this man? Does he not understand that he referred to these people as scum and said that we should keep a record of who they are and where they are so that we can track them? What is wrong, America? What is wrong with us? You know, I had so many opportunities in this country. I talked briefly about the fact that my father's family goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But my grandmother was a maid. She came to this country from Italy. My grandfather was a carpenter. In the very next generation, nobody in my family prior to my generation had a college education. My brother had, and all three of us, my brother, sister, and I, all put ourselves through college, every bit of it. My brother had a doctorate degree. My sister had a doctorate degree and was a lawyer. And I have a master's degree. And I started my own business, became wealthy at it, and I was elected United States Senator from the District of Columbia 3 times. I believe in my heart of hearts that only in America could that happen. Only in America. And we need to keep that America alive for our children and for our descendants. Let's not fall into the deep, dark pit of self-interest at the stake of everything that we care about. Do we not care about our children? Do we not care about our moms and our sisters and the women of this country who have built this country, who have been the strength and the backbone of this country? I don't know what else I can say, America, except that we need to stand up. We need to hang in there, and we need to stand for what's right and not what's expedient. We need to do the right thing. Let's never forget what Mark Twain said, that you're never wrong to do the right thing. And the right thing would have been to elect a candidate that wants to make the future better rather than go back to a past which is self-indulgent and only benefits a few. And that's all I have to say about Donald Trump. Next week, we will talk about celebrity, and we'll try to work out what happened and where we go from here. But now, let me talk for a moment about the most important thing. Let us never, ever, ever forget that our freedom is not free. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. I want to say to every man and woman who's ever worn the uniform, God bless you for standing up for me, my wife, my children, my friends, my country. And for every person that served, including all the wives, daughters, moms, dads who have made sacrifices, who sacrificed their young people, who have, you know, my brother, and I'll talk about him in a second, was a veteran, and his wife and family moved all over the world with him. They sacrificed so that he could stand up for America. So to all the families of veterans, I also want to say thank you so much for all you've done. And in particular, you know, we dedicate a song every week to the guests we've had on the show. But today, our song goes out to veterans. And I especially want to thank my friend, Joe Rogers, who's an Army veteran, my friend Barry Domet, who served in the Coast Guard, my friend Harry Harris, who was in the Navy, my brother Major Paul Brown, who was an Air Force officer and flew in an F-111 during combat, my dad, Captain Donald L. Brown, my grandfather, Lieutenant Alexander Brown, and my great great, great grandfather, Private Joel Prescott, who enlisted in the Continental Army when he was 17 years old and stood up to build a country to make a better world and make a better family, make a better place for his family and his descendants. Let's keep it going. God bless every one of you. Here's a sentimental song from the Dixie Chicks. Here's Traveling Soldier, so we never forget that among the victories are also great losses. Thanks, and tune in next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.